$30. We can kind of see that there's a, when we talk about the market price for a win on Fangraphs, we usually have estimated that over the last couple of years it's been around $4.5 to $5 million per win. And a lot of people like to say, oh, that's nonlinear. It's only for really good players like CeCe Sabathia. The guys at the bottom sign for nothing. And there are some guys at the bottom sign for nothing. But if you have a fairly durable starting pitcher who can, you can expect 150 to 175 innings of not terrible baseball, and you go up free agency, that guy might cost you $4 to $5, $6 million. And sometimes it might cost you a 2-year contract. So even at the bottom end of the scale, these guys were fairly decently paid. Hiroki Kuroda and Carl Pavano, slightly better versions. In Kuroda's case, a lot better version. But, they're basically two and a half wing pitchers. They're not amazing, but they're, you like having in your rotation. Burley and Dempster, another step above that. And we see the prices go up significantly. The years especially start to go up. It's not so much a rise in annual average value as much as just having given them 3 or 4 year contracts. And then once you get to like the all-star level, John Lackey did used to be an all-star. I know that contract looks absurd now, but he was pretty good with the Angels for a long time. Through 200 innings, I think 7 years in a row. He was a pretty durable innings horse, kind of like Burley was. He had some injury issues in his last year, but it was a minor thing. He pitched well when he was healthy. So those guys provided 5-year deals. Lee and Sabathia, obviously they got paid very well for what they were able to provide. So if you're going to buy a healthy free agent starting pitcher, you better have a giant war chest. And as numerous analysts besides me have pointed out, these contracts generally don't work out so well. The history of big free agent contracts is bad, especially for starting pitchers. That between injury, nutrition, and just our inability to evaluate pitching by itself and separate that out from defense and park has made it tough to say this pitcher is going to be able to switch teams and do well in his new park. So giving a lot of money to a healthy starting pitching, a healthy starting pitcher is not always a great use of resources. So diving into the other end of the pool where you're dealing with guys who have medical red flags, it's definitely cheaper. So so advantages of signing pitchers with medical question marks, short-term contracts, you're going to see we are dealing almost exclusively with one-year deals. There are a few cases where guys were injured and still got 2-year contracts. I don't totally know how that happened, but for almost in every case, it's a 1-year deal. You almost never see more than a 2-year deal. And they're obviously at lower cost. So, a lot of these guys are signed for between $1 and $5 million. There are guys in previous years who have gotten more than that. But for the most case, if you're buying a starter coming off a season where you're on a disabled list for at least 15 days, you're going to be paying less than $5 million. So your overall cost is less, and you don't have to give them multiple years, which gives you kind of flexibility if the guy gets hurt again. And kind of allows you to evaluate how well that injury is going to affect him in the future. But also good mid-season trade chips. If you've got a guy who has a history of injuries and you give him a cheap little contract and he pitches well in the first half of the season, you can flip him for prospects. Carl Pavano a couple years ago did this with the Indians. He signed for $1.5 million after being hurt for about 35 years in a row. And he pitched fairly well. Actually, I guess he signed with the Twins. Anyway, he signed with one of the two and they traded him to the other one. I don't remember which way it went. Indians and Twins, there you go. So the Indians basically paid him $1.5 million, got 120 decent innings out of him, and then sent him to Minnesota for prospects. That's a pretty good return on investment. So these guys can definitely be valuable assets since they don't have large salaries, they don't have long-term commitments. And in most cases, you're not going to ask for Bryce Harper in exchange for some guy who had arm surgery last year. So they're trade chips that are attractive to other teams as well. You can delay your service time for your top prospects. So if you're one of these clubs that I won't mention that likes to tell your guys they're going to hang out in AAA unless they sign an 8-year contract for no money, this is an opportunity for you to keep them down and say, hey, look, I'm not going to call up any of my top guys at the beginning of the season. I'm going to sign one of these guys who I know is not going to give me 200 innings, but I'm basically going to plan on replacing him in May or June anyway. If he's pitching well, I can flip him. If he's not pitching well, that's okay. I've got a guy I want on the roster. So if you have a major league ready starting pitcher, I think the Diamondbacks are a pretty good example of this. Trevor Bauer can probably get in the rotation right now. But, if they would have signed a maybe slightly higher upside injury type guy instead of a low-end guy like Joe Saunders, they could have said, okay, if we get this guy, he gives us a decent performance in April and May, then we can kind of hold Bauer down until after the Super 2 deadline. If that guy's pitching well, then we might decide we just want to keep Bauer down there if he's not ready. If Bauer's pitching well and this guy isn't pitching well, it's very easy to flip them out and say, hey, you're a top prospect, and you know, we only wasted a couple $1 million on that guy, no problem. So it doesn't present a barrier to your prospect, and it gives you a chance for upside in the first part of the season. So it also creates spring training competition. I have no idea how to quantify this, but coaches say this is a good thing. If you have guys in camp battling for roster spots, they like that. If 25 guys show up to camp and know that they're going to make the opening day roster. So whether this is a good thing or a bad thing, I don't know, but coaches say they like it, so I put it on the list. Disadvantages of playing pitchers with medical question marks. So you have a much larger variance around the expected performance, even if you did a weighted average of all possible outcomes. Vince Gennaro talked about this a little bit the other day in his presentation, but you might say, okay, look, this guy's got a 5% chance of being a 6-war guy, but he's got a 50% chance of being a 0-war guy, and you basically take all the weighted averages of everything you could expect. You're going to get a one expected number, maybe, and say, okay, I expect to get about 1 WAR from this guy. But the spread around that's going to be huge. So you're not going to have the stability. A lot of times, if you're a contender, you want stability. You just want someone back in the rotation that you know is not going to kill you. You don't want to lose a one game, you know, the division by one game because you took a flyer on some injury guy who posted in the ERA of 8 because his elbow was hurt. So the variance is an issue for certain teams. It can be a good thing for other teams as well. Unpredictable availability, I think, is something that is maybe a little bit overlooked. It's kind of the flip side of the Trevor Bauer analogy I just used with the Diamondbacks, is there could be some team that is absolutely committed to keeping their guy down on the farm until July, and they say, we think this kid needs 3 more months, but he's our 6th best starter. But we really want to sign somebody so that we don't have to rush this guy to the major leagues. And if that guy then blows out his arm in April, you're now faced with changing your plan or trading for another starting pitcher, or signing someone out of the Mexican League or something. Like there could be a significant negative effect on some other plan in your organization if the guy that you want to have starting in the rotation is unavailable. And you know, that spotty availability can be tough too. Like Bedard is an example I'll use since I've watched him be hurt a lot over the last few years. But he's a guy who you never, like, every fifth day, you didn't really know if he was going to take the ball. Like, even if he had pitched well, he could just show up and be like, ah, my arm hurts, I need a few days off. And so you always end up like a starter down in Tacoma pitching on Eric Bedard's schedule. Like, he was basically tied to Eric Bedard down at AAA, and if Eric Bedard needed to skip a start, you'd be like, hey, get on the plane! You know, he's like a standing plane ticket to get up for whoever the team was. That's you basically are handcuffing someone to your major league starting pitcher in case he shows up to park that day and can't pitch. That's not a positive thing. It's not something the organization would want. So that's definitely a negative. There's limited long-term benefit. So I think this is probably the biggest downside to signing these 7 guys is if you win the lottery and one of these guys are awesome, they're just free agents again next year and they get a lot more money. So you're not getting, I mean, we'll talk about Randy McCarthy. He's the example. He's the basically the best case scenario for one of these guys. The A's still have him under team control for 1 more year. Since he was still had some arbitration time left. But in most cases, if you give these guys $2 or $3 million for 1 year and they pitch well, you don't get them long term. So you're either flipping them for prospects at the deadline or you've only got 1 year of value out of them. In very few cases are you actually going to get long term value out of one of these pitchers. So it's really kind of a short term play. And then there's another one I just put in at the end. I don't have no idea how to quantify this or whether it matters at all, but if you've got the Pittsburgh Pirates this year have 8 guys with injury problems in their rotation, I imagine their trainers are going to work really hard trying to keep Charlie Morton and A.J. Burnett and Eric Bedard and all these guys healthy. Maybe the trainers have lots of free time, but I have no idea. So I just put this on there. If you've got a lot of injured pitchers that can just take away from your trainer's opportunity to keep other guys healthy or play on their iPads or whatever it is that they do, this is one of those things that I'm just kind of, it's on there for fun, basically. So these are all the guys who signed, 2011 starters who signed 1-year free agent contracts last winter. Not all of these guys are injury guys. Basically, I went through the list of all guys who had signed 1-year deals, and we'll point out the ones that aren't. So Javier Vasquez wasn't hurt last year. He just had New York disability, whatever it is that causes Javier Vasquez to be terrible every time he's in Manhattan. So there's a couple other guys who weren't necessarily there. Dustin Mosley didn't have the super serious arm thing. Aaron Prang hadn't been recently totally disabled. But for the most part, these guys are almost all guys who are dealing with some recent injury issues or in Bartolo Colon's case, lengthy case of injury issues. And as you can see, McCarthy, as we've talked about, is the best case scenario for signing a scrap heap starting pitcher. You give him no money. He's fantastically awesome. We talked about it on his panel the other night. He led the American League in FIP. by our calculations, I believe he was worth 5 wins in 170 innings pitched. That's something you would have to pay $20-25 million for if you were expecting it. They got it for about $1 million, and they have him under team control for 2012. The point of the signing is why you make deals like this. You're hoping for that outcome. You don't expect that outcome, but you need to look at the rest of the guys and say, even if we put McCarthy aside, say that was an aberration. Maybe it was a guy that we just all missed on. We should have seen that he had performed better in Winterball or whatever. Bartolo Colon was the other success story. He didn't pitch well all year, but he pitched pretty well for the first 3.5 months of the season and gave the Yankees 150 really solid innings for what accounted to $2 million. Jeff Francis wasn't amazing, but he gave the Royals 180 innings for $2 million. His peripherals suggest that maybe his defense caused his ERA to be a little bit higher than it should have been. I can believe that, as long as you ask me to play shortstop. Although I guess he was a Brewer last year, so that joke didn't make any sense. But I'm going to take every chance I can to make fun of you and ask you about his defense. Overall, you look at this list, and this guy's been pretty well. Eric Bedard, Freddy Garcia, Chris Capuano. Brad Penny was awful, but he at least caused the Tigers to be able to keep Jacob Turner in minor leagues all year, which he's throwing 88, but he could have been a lot worse. Basically every guy on this list performed some useful skill. Even Rodrigo Lopez wasn't great, but he allowed the Cubs to kind of be able to stash their prospects in AAA and not burn any service time. There's really not too many guys on this list that you would say actively hurt their team. Obviously with these guys, since the cost is so low, if they're bad, you can just cut them. Or in Andrew Miller's case, just make the same with the bullpen. So that's one of the nice things with the low cost is that you're not going to have a guy throw 150 really bad innings. You'll just get rid of them before you're trying to justify the contract. Here's a breakdown of pitchers and samples. There were 20 pitchers who signed one-year deals last winter. I threw Roky Kuroda out of the sample because he wasn't really a true free agent. He basically said, I only want to pitch for the Dodgers. So he kind of put himself through arbitration and said, give me as much as you'll give me. And they gave him $10 million on a one-year deal. He's not an example of this at all. He wasn't someone that some other team could have signed. So I threw him out, left us with 19 pitchers. There's only 16 guys on that previous list. Brandon Webb, Justin Dukeshire, and Ryan Roland Smith aren't on the list because they didn't pitch in the majors. We still have to account for them. They still cost money and spring training time when they were in the team's plan. So the fact that they didn't pitch doesn't mean we can just ignore them. We have to include them still and say they produce no value whatsoever for their cost. So the 19 starters signed for base salaries that I was able to figure at around $41 million. As we talked about, there's incentive clauses in all these deals. Bartolo Colon, Eric Bedard, a lot of these guys had incentives for innings and starts. So best I can figure is it pushed it up to about $50 million. That's not an exact figure. It could have been 55, it could have been 60, but I really missed a lot of incentives. I don't think I missed that many. It could have been as low as like 47. So between 47 and 55, I think it's about $50 million for those 19 starting pitchers. Here's what they did for that money. 350 starts, 2,000 innings. It's almost 6 innings per start, which is pretty good. There's their walk rate, strikeout, and ground ball rate. We'll talk about how that relates to league average if you're not familiar with what the standards are for those numbers. So these are our ERA minus, FIP minus, exit minus on Fangraphs. This is kind of one of my favorite ways to look at a pitcher. Kind of shows you how well he does in various categories. These are, if you're familiar with ERA plus on Baseball Reference, this is our version. We just go the other way where ERA is higher is worse, just like it is with ERA. So a 103 ERA minus means that in the group, their starter, their ERA was 3% worse than the league average, but starting pitchers in general perform worse than league average because there's also relief pitchers in the sample of the overall league average. So, and basically, their FIP minus exit minus are really close to their ERA, which means these aren't guys who got lucky on batting average and balls in play or home run rate or anything like that. All told, by using Fangraphs WAR, say these 16 pitchers were 23.7 WAR. For $50 million, that means they came out to about $2.11 million per win. The average price of a win in free agency last year was about $4.5 million per win, so that's pretty good. And these guys took up about 1.8 WAR per roster spot. This is a little bit of a fledged calculation because there's guys who Chris Young pitched like 30 innings and then he got replaced and someone else took his roster spot, and we're not calculating any of the value of the guy who took his roster spot after he went on the disabled list. We're assuming that everyone who replaced them is replacement level. That's not a great assumption. In most cases, teams have someone who's slightly better than replacement level, especially if they're signing a broken down injury starter. They're not just going to have no depth behind that. They're going to count on the fact that the guy is going to do some starts. but it's about 2 WAR per roster spot. And if you're familiar with the WAR scale, 2 WAR is about league average. So these guys were basically league average starting pitchers. I put up a slide of kind of league averages so you can see where they were in relation. The average major league starting pitcher threw just over 6 innings per start, so they threw 1/10 of an inning less per start last year. That's a very small difference. Their walk rate was actually better than the league average, so one of the things I think we've noticed is that guys who have injury issues also don't throw as hard as they used to, and by and large, it's a collection of pitchers who have lower velocities, so they throw a lot of strikes in order to compensate. We see that with their strikeout rate and ground ball rate also indicates that they're low stuff guys. So overall, if you're shopping at this collection of pitchers, you're probably going to get someone who throws 88 and tries to pitch to the bottom of the zone and gets contact. You're basically going to try and build the Minnesota Twins pitching staff. But, you know, it's worked. And the Twins have made good pitching staffs for a long time. There's nothing wrong with that model. Again, we see the ERA minus FIP minus exit minus the starting pitchers in the injuries. It was like 1 year deals were basically as good as starting pitchers in the major leagues as a whole. Their WAR per roster spot is a little bit lower, but again, as a fledged number. Basically, the point of putting up the, you know, we're not trying to be precise for the decimal point, I'm just saying, hey, 1.8 to 0.5, they're pretty close. These guys were basically major league average starting pitchers or something not too far away from it. As I mentioned, you know, free agent starters last year made about $4.5 million per win. These guys made about just a little over $2 million per win, so their price was half of what their return on investment was. So it was double what it was for overall free agents. 1 year conclusions, which, you know, you shouldn't do 1 year conclusions, but I'm doing them anyway. Starting pitchers on 1 year deals were the best value proposition in free agency of any type of player in baseball in 2011. I think we can see that, you know, if you could pay $2 million to win in free agency, you'd do pretty well and you'd want to buy a lot of free agents. Brandon McCarthy, as we talked about, is the best ROI of any free agent signed at any position last year. And the A's still have him under contract for 2012 as well. It's hard to do much better than what the A's did with McCarthy last year. That's kind of the gold standard for free agents. Of the 19 guys who signed, 8 of them we can consider busts. They either didn't pitch or they pitched really poorly or they pitched very little. Between those 8 guys, they cost a grand total of $17 million. So Brandon Webb got $3 million to rehab from Rangers. You know, Chin Wong got a couple million dollars to rehab. That's one of those ones where he's in the list of non-performers, but it also gave the Nationals a chance to re-sign him again for 2012. So I think you can make the case that that was a future investment on their part. They basically paid for his rehab in order to help him get a discount for future years. So I don't even know if you call that a bust, but because it didn't perform any value last year, we're throwing him into that category, maybe unfairly. And if you look at it and say, oh, well, you know, if these 1 year contract guys did so well, how could you have done with guys who were, had a little bit more durability, had a little bit more track record? The guys who had done enough to earn 2 year deals, they were actually worse. Carl Romano, Kevin Correa, Jorge De La Rosa, and Jorge Westbrook all signed 2 year contracts last winter. Their 4 deals combined for $59 million. I think you'd rather have almost everyone on the 1 year pitcher list than any of those 4, especially when you consider contracts. I would imagine most of the teams would take a do-over on those deals. The Twins might keep Romano. He was okay. He's still an innings puncher. But, you know, De La Rosa got hurt. Correa was awful. Westbrook was getting out of the rotation, and he's now standing in the way of signing Roy Oswalt. So those 3 are almost clear failures in terms of results.
Correa was an all-star.
He should have been. So what about previous years? I'm going to go over my hedging once again, since I just want to be clear that I don't have the injury information. The teams do, so I'm certainly not trying to tell major league teams that, hey, look, this is the definitive study on whether you should sign injured pitchers. They have access to better information than I do. I was doing the best I could with publicly available information. Not all injuries are created equal, so I'm looking at days on the DL. But day on the DL with like a, you know, you sneezed and your back hurt is a lot different than you tore out your arm and you needed Tommy John surgery. So when we're looking at, when we're grouping everyone by what they spent at least 15 days on the disabled list, there's obviously huge varieties within that. And it was outside the scope of my project in order to try to break it down by injury type. That's not, I just don't have good enough information or enough medical knowledge to say this injury should require this kind of discount and this injury should require a less discount. So we're lumping all injury guys together. That's not fair. Sorry. As we mentioned, the reporting was on incentives or inconsistent, so I'm going to have low numbers on some salaries. Also, the effects of the global economic struggles in 2009. Basically, the free agent market drastically changed when the global banking thing came to a halt, and no free agents got any money, and Major League Baseball wasn't really sure what attendance was going to do, so they stopped spending money. So does that affect my analysis of the change in price of pitcher wins? Probably, because this thing happened right in the middle of it. So also something to keep in mind. as well as the shift in run environment the last couple of years. Now that, like, you know, apparently every pitcher with a pulse can get an ERA under four. It's, you know, no one's scoring runs anymore. So now pitching maybe is cheaper because it's less of a rare thing than it was a few years ago. So seeing a decline in pitching at the same time you're seeing a decline in run scoring, you know, that's obviously a factor. So in order to look at previous years, I went back to the 2006-2007 offseason. Essentially, that's the amount of data I can get in a reasonable form. So it's not a comprehensive study. I only went back 5 years, but that's kind of what we'll look at. Sorry I talk so fast, by the way. It's something that I've been trying to work on for years, and it's, I can't blink on TV, and I can't talk slow. It's 2006 offseason. It was a little weird. Six pitchers signed 1 year major league deals after spending at least 15 days on the disabled list. David Wells, Randy Wolf, Wade Miller, John Thompson, Tomo Oka, and Tony Armas. As you can see, it was a bonanza of awesome pitchers that year. Really just a place you want to be throwing a lot of money. David Wells got $3 million for his age 44 season after spending some time on the DL in his age 43 season, which I find hilarious, and I think is totally useless for my study because, you know, there aren't that many guys going in their age 44 season. We kind of have no idea how much money you would have gotten if he was 33 as a 43. We can talk about David Wells if you want, but I don't think he's very representative of the kind of gentleman in the market. So I'm just going to kind of ignore him. These six pitchers combined for 2.1 more and cost $18 million. That's really bad. You know, $9 million per win was awful now. 5 years ago, it was like three times the going rate. So these guys were bad. This strategy didn't work that year. Randy Wolf was 44% of that $18 million salary by himself, and he's the one that I think is really interesting. He's the guy we're going to look at a little bit more. This is Randy Wolf in 2006, 57 innings pitched, a league worst walk rate. That's Oliver Perez-esque right there. That's a mediocre, slightly below average strikeout rate, and he's a fly ball pitcher. So when you're a guy who walks a lot of guys, doesn't strike anyone out, and gives up fly balls, that's really someone you want to give a lot of money to. As you can see, he was a negative WAR player, and he was bad across the board. ERA, FIP, XFIP, it doesn't matter how you evaluate it, he was terrible. And the Dodgers said, nah, that's worth $8 million. He had a track record of success previously, but I think if we look at the past offseason, and we see guys coming off good seasons, who are signing for, you know, Bartolo Colon got $700,000 a few months ago, coming off a good year, it's pretty shocking to see a guy coming off this bad of a season get $8 million. But to the Dodgers' credit, he performed really well. So this could be an area where scouting and medical information that they had was far superior to what you would just get from the stat line. He gave him 1.7 WAR. He only pitched 100 innings, so the injury issue remained. But when he was on the mound, he was actually really good. It was his best year since 2004 or 2003. So kudos to the Dodgers. They might have still overspent a little bit. $8 million for a half season of a league average starter is probably a little high. But, you know, they got some value from him, and they were able to re-sign him to a deal. He was able to, you know, provide value going forward. So this is actually an interesting thing where you would look at it and say, the stats say this was a ridiculous signing and it actually worked out okay. But I do think it's interesting to note that a guy this bad with this many injury problems was able to get a significant amount of money in the 2006 offseason. Also in the 2006 offseason, Mark Mulder basically was the worst pitcher in baseball the year before. He threw almost 100 innings with the ERA over 7. His peripherals were better than that, but they weren't good. But they were, you know, no one has a true talent ERA of 7. So the Cardinals gave him 213 even after that performance. And Woody Williams, who was pitching in Petco Park and had a massive gap between his ERA and his peripherals at age 40, he got 212.5, and he had some injury issues as well. Mulder pitched 12 innings the rest of his career and then retired. Woody Williams was replacement level in Houston and was released, and they ate that entire contract. Both of those contracts were disasters. So I think between Mulder, Williams, and Wolf, we see that there was certainly an appetite for dinged up starting pitchers, and they were getting, you know, pretty significant prices. And for the most part, they didn't provide any return on investment. So this was a bad strategy to take in 2006. 2007 offseason, there were 5 pitchers who signed 1 year major league deal after spending at least 15 days in the DL. Randy Wolf, you're going to see here. This is like a Randy Wolf presentation. He shows up a lot. Kenny Rogers, Matt Redman, Matt Clement, and then I put a little smiley, the sad face after Mark Pryor because what happened to Mark Pryor was that. Those 5 pitchers combined for a total of 3.2 WAR. 2.1 of that was Randy Wolf, so he was 2/3 of that by himself. And they cost $16 million. Again, $5 million to win. This isn't a very good deal. That's kind of going right now. In 2007, that was way too high. It's interesting to me that after Wolf came off that awful 2006 season where he got $8 million, he pitched pretty well, and then he got $4.75 million for the next year. So he'd only pitched 100 innings. It's possible that team said, hey, look, this is a guy with recurring injury problems. It wasn't just a one-year fluke. Let's downgrade our price. But he was bad in 2006 and got $8 million. He was good in 2007 and got $5 million. Go figure. The Kenny Rogers one slays me. Through 63 innings at age 42, had all kinds of injury problems. He wasn't very good. And then he had an $8 million guarantee for his age 43 season. I don't remember why. I would love to hear an explanation for that. That just seemed like a waste of money, and shockingly, he didn't pitch very well. The only multi-year deal given to any starting pitcher that winter, Carlos Silva, that also turned out really well. Let's throw that in there because I like to remind people of the Carlos Silva contract. It was fun to live through. 2008 offseason, we had 9 pitchers who fit the category, a much more talented bunch this year around. Got a bunch of Hall of Famers on the list, Randy Johnson, John Smoltz, Andy Pettit, Brett Penny, Daniel Cabrera, Mike Hampton, Carl Duana, Tom Glavin, Bartolo Colon. These guys did much better. Their total salary, and again, I'm not able to count for all incentives here, so this could even be closer to $40 million. I had their base salaries around $32.5 million, and they produced 12.5 WAR. Most of that was Carl Pavano and Andy Pettit. If you take Pettit out of the deal, because he's a little bit of a special case, kind of like Carrillo, where he said, I'm only going to play for one team, he probably doesn't belong in the same role. You reduce it to 8.8 WAR. And $27 million was about $3 million a win. So these guys worked out fairly well. Overall, a lot of that was Carl Lovano, who I don't know that you can predict that. He'd been hurt for a long time, and then he actually had a really good year. So, and then I just point out the durable starters. This is one of the reasons to sign these guys is if you want healthy innings eaters, Derek Lowe and AJ Burnett cost a lot of money, and I think in cases as a Carlos Silva deal, I wish I hadn't done that. 2009 offseason, this is kind of the tipping point one, I think. Again, we have 9 pitchers, Ben Sheets, Rich Harden, Brett Myers, Hendy Villa, Chen Ming Wong, Justin Dutcher, Scuttles, and Eric Bedard, and Claudio Vargas. Very happy that Randy Wolf doesn't show up on the list for the first time. These 9 pitchers combined for 5 WAR and $35 million, and $7 million a win. That's not a good deal. Durable starters like Jaro Lackey, whether it was a reaction to the Silva bust or whether there's something specifically about their stuff that teams didn't like. They only got 215. That was kind of like the standard contract for a guy who gave you 180 league average-ish innings. And you know, John Lackey got 683, 583. I think that's a typo. He got 583. You know, that didn't work out so well, but as we can see, it seemed like the cost of quality starting pitching was coming down a little bit, and the innings meters guys were basically a total bust. So Ben Sheets got $10 million from the A's, despite having not pitched an inning the year before. He came back, he gave them 100 okay innings, and then he's been out of baseball ever since. Rich Harden was a disaster for the Rangers. Overall, you know, Brett Myers was okay, but over most of this group was really bad. Eric Bedard barely pitched. This was another example of teams throwing a lot of money at wounded starters and getting very little return on investment. So my theory is that, and I, you know, again, there's all those other, that slide's a little early. So my theory is that this offseason, the last two offseasons we've seen are a little bit of a reaction to this, where teams said, hey, look, there's some upside plays and guys like Ben Sheets and Rich Harden. Let's go after, you know, former aces who just have some arm problems, and if it works out, this is awesome. We're getting a really good deal. And then they realize that, you know, paying $10 million for a guy who didn't pitch the year before might not be the best idea. So we've seen the price for wounded starters go down quite a bit. Obviously, 2 years ago, we looked through the list. Those guys didn't make a lot of money overall. And, you know, 19 pitchers got a total of $50 million. So I think that the Sheets and Harden deals especially were kind of a caused a reaction around baseball and said, like, maybe we shouldn't do that. And so we've seen a reduction in cost over the last couple years. This past winter, I think it's continued the trend from last winter. Paul Mahomes, Eric Bedard, Freddie Garcia, and Chen Ming Wong all got basically the same contract or something very close to it, as guys with some injury issues, past arm problems, with some upside, who all performed fairly well when they were healthy. But they basically got between $4 and $5 million. That was the going rate for starters with an injury issue last year. Roy Oswalt didn't like that price, so he's still sitting at home. Mark Burley, and his durability, got $4.58, showing if you don't get hurt, this is what it costs to acquire a pitcher who doesn't have arm issues. And then at the end, you know, I put in a little note, if you're going to get hurt, you should miss bats. Chris Capuano got $2.10 from the Dodgers. Jeff Francis got a minor league deal from the Reds that'll pay him $1.5 million if he makes the roster. And they're pretty similar pitchers. I mean, they're not in terms of style, but in terms of expected production. For instance, the guy who's consistently underproduced his peripherals, so maybe you can say, he's a guy who, FIP and XFIP might not apply to. Chris Capuano has also underperformed his peripherals, especially last year. His ERA was not very good. His strike rate was excellent, but it's interesting to me how two left-handed starters with mediocre fastballs got such different contracts. It seems like the strikeout rate Chris Capuano was as bad as Jeff Francis doesn't. So can we draw any conclusions? I've tried to make it clear that this is not definitive. Please don't leave here and say, Dave Cameron told me to build my rotation on injured pitchers and then come back to me when it doesn't work next year. But we can see that the price of damaged goods, starters or scrap heap starters, whatever you want to call them, certainly lower in the last couple of years than it was in the years prior. Teams were much more willing the previous three off seasons to sign guys who had previously been good but were coming off major injury issues to longer term deals or bigger money deals at least, and in some cases giving out 2-year contracts. These pitchers were generally bad, it was a waste of money, and I think that's one of the reasons the teams have corrected, and over the last couple of years we've seen a reduction in price for these pitchers. It's a market correction as a reaction to recent failures. Despite the success of damaged pitchers in 2011, there was no correction the other way, so teams didn't look at my list of guys and say, man, look at all these injured pitchers who did really good last year, let's go sign injured pitchers. That's probably a good idea. I think if they're looking at the past and saying, hey, look, that was kind of a fluke, there aren't Brandon McCarthy's every year, Marco Colon doesn't come out of semi-retirement every year to be an all-star or close to it. So I think teams were wise to not overreact and go the other way. Whether they found the sweet spot and they're paying getting up pitchers the right amount is kind of open for speculation. Who should pursue wounded starters? I would say contenders with a large ability to absorb risk. The Yankees spent it perfectly last year. They had the jackpot with Colon and Garcia and were able to build a backup rotation on the cheap. They've got the ability to give someone like Colon a couple $1 million, or with Andy Pettit, they'll give him $2.5 million. And if he didn't pitch last year, he's coming back, great. They can obviously absorb the money. Philadelphia is, I think, another team who could take the strategy to heart, and then Joe Blanton, who's already under contract, but they're kind of doing that with him in that they didn't replace Blanton, so he's a guy coming up with a lot of injuries and arm issues. But if he pitches well for them, he could be a decent trade chip, or he could just be a good number five starter. Non-contenders who could use significant value pieces, so obviously the A's got a lot of value out of Brandon McCarthy. The Mariners last year re-signed Eric Bedard for the 75th time, paid for his rehab, and he actually gave them like a really good first half of the season, and they turned him into a prospect. I mean, whether that prospect turns out or not, it was still a good deal for them. So teams with top prospects may be ready by May. This is the Trevor Bauer example. We've already talked about that. Teams with pitchers, parks, can offer a comfortable place for rehab and reestablish value. I personally think the Padres should have a rotation full of these guys. They should just be like, hey, look, this is a terrible place to hit. If you come in San Diego, it's going to be really fantastic for your stats. So I think the Padres have an opportunity to really take advantage of this. In short, when you look at the teams that should be interested in broken down starting pitchers, it's almost all of them. It's contenders, it's non-contenders, it's teams with the prospects that are going to be ready, it's teams in big parks. That's most of the teams in baseball. So wounded starters are certainly lottery tickets, but they're ones worth buying at current prices. I'm not saying they should buy up at the prices. You shouldn't necessarily, I don't think you should give Paul Holm $10 million instead of the $5 million that he got. But, if this is the price going forward in future off seasons for a guy who threw 100 to 150 league average innings and had some arm issues, $5 million for that kind of starter, even if that's what you expect to get in the future, it's probably better to have a rotation of a couple of those guys and then maybe an interesting prospect that you want to give a chance to than spend $12 to $15 million per year on some durable innings horse in terms of AJ Burnett or Derek Lowe or Charles Silver or Barry Vito or Jake Westbrook or Jeff Suban or name the durable innings eater who then turned out to be terrible. My personal opinion is the team should spend on quality, not on quantity, because predicting future health is really hard, and it's one thing that we haven't figured out yet. So instead of just assuming that guys who have been healthy will continue to be healthy and guys that have been hurt will continue to be hurt, we should just figure out how good they are and then kind of adjust our expected innings down for guys who have had some injury issues, but focus on quality more than quantity. So I can't believe I went 35 minutes. That was way longer than I thought I was going to go. But we do have some time for some questions, I think. So if there's any questions.
When you calculated average dollars per war,
yeah.
Was that based off of all MLB players or just pitchers?
The dollar war, the $4.5 million that I was quoting, or the ones for just these pitchers? The $4.5 million for all pitchers, or for all players. That's kind of the 2011 price that we use for all pitchers, for all players. Pitchers are actually generally a little bit higher than that. There's a premium on pitching. So you could argue that last year, last season, it was maybe even closer to $5 million per win. So yeah, pitching is expensive in the free agent market.
Medical procedures and techniques have improved.
Yep.
Going down what they can project. There was a hole there. Did that go into your study at all?
So medical procedures have certainly improved, and we have access to a lot more medical information than I do. I don't know that I agree that we've gotten to the point where team medical information can predict who's going to stay healthy and who can't. I think if that was true, we would see teams doing a lot better job of allocating their resources towards healthy pitchers. So the fact that we have so many pitchers making a lot of money on the disabled list suggests to me that even teams haven't yet figured out how to predict who's going to stay healthy. So I would love to do more research with more medical information. If any of the team personnel in here want to share it with me, I'm available afterwards. Right.
Yeah, it appears to me, looking at some of the past season data, I'll give the teams the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they're getting a little smarter, because in the previous years, it looked like they, like Randy Wolf or whoever, that they were assuming that, well, we're going to get a full season out of them, which was probably unrealistic. And then maybe you should say, well, this is a probability that you'll pitch and do well, the probability that you'll suck, the probability that you're not going to pitch at all,
right,
and weight them all together.
Yep.
You know, maybe Eric Bedard. Well, we'll think you'll be a four war pitcher for half the season. We'll think you'll be on the disabled list for half the season, so we'll pay you for two.
Yeah, right. And I think that's kind of what teams have done. And this is another variable I didn't mention, but major league front offices are certainly getting smarter, so I don't want to bag on Ed Wade too much, but there's no way he should have given Woody Williams 2 years and $13 million, given his peripherals and the fact that he's 40 years old and out of Petco Park. Like, that was just not a good idea. So I think in this day and age, Woody Williams wouldn't have gotten $13 million for 2 years. I think that contract is a remnant of the past. And so I think overall, that's another factor that goes into the declining price of free agent starters, is just teams are getting smarter.
I think with the first day you mentioned that the average time that a DL for a starter is about 8 a month.
Yeah.
How'd you come up with that?
So there's a guy named Jeff Zimmerman who works for us at Fangraphs, and he's got an injury database that I pulled a lot of this information from. So it's a calculation he gave me. I haven't tried to be sure it's exactly right, but I think basically he just took average days in DL in total and average number of pitchers in a year and divided. So it's not that every pitcher is going to spend at least 30 days, but when you factor in the guys who miss a whole year, over the course of the number of pitchers in the sample and how many of the numbers of days on the DL it is, the average is about 30 days, 30 to 40 days on the disabled list per season.
If you look at guys who spent, they were injured, then spent the year in the minor leagues or a year on rehab, and then came back to the majors. I think the Indians for a while were signing guys to a minor league contract, rehabbing them,
yeah,
and then promoting them.
So one of the important things that I was able to do last offseason, because it was fresh in my mind, and I was able to go through the list and kind of try to remember where these guys' situations were, is it was a lot easier to identify minor league guys who were either injured or just terrible and kind of separate them into bins. Going back to 2006, I can't remember why a pitcher got a minor league contract, whether it was because he was bad or he was hurt, and I didn't have access to all the injury information, so I couldn't bin them that easily. So I unfortunately ignored minor league contracts. As you might have seen, all the analysis created was for major league deals. So in prior years, there were certainly teams who might have given, like I think Juan Hernandez a couple times, got a minor league deal and then actually ended up pitching in the majors almost 200 innings. Those guys weren't included in the sample because it was limited access to information to find out what the reason was that they got a minor league deal, whether it was just they were terrible or they were injured. And I didn't want to include guys in the sample who weren't injured and say they were. I thought that would really screw up my study. So I figured it was best to err on the side of caution and only guys that I knew that were hurt. And so that's why I picked guys who had spent time on the major league disabled list the year before.
Have you noticed any particular teams have, through other work at Fangraphs, that have a particular knack for rehabbing guys?
I don't know that I've seen one team that's where they're constantly taking injured guys and making them healthy. I think we've seen teams that are shopping in this bargain bin a little more often than others. I think the Indians have shown that they kind of like to go after guys like this, and have shown some affinity for guys with arm problems, and they're going to give them cheap contracts and hope it works out. But I think it also just kind of goes along with payroll size. So, like, the teams that don't have a lot of money kind of have to shop here. It's like shopping in Value Village or something, because that's where they have to get their clothes. So I don't know if it's because they're good at it or because they have to.
Do you think teams that can absorb the risk, like the Yankees, or teams that are perhaps are more risk-averse, like the Royals or something, of those two, who do you think is better suited to go for the starters? Does it make sense for the Royals to sign a guy like Bruce Chatham, or if the Yankees might be able to gamble?
Well, I don't know that it makes sense for anyone to sign Bruce Chatham, but they did. I would say that teams that are at the low end of the spectrum and don't have many other options should really be the ones that are pursuing me. So, like, I think the Pirates signing Eric Bedard is a really good deal. That, to me, that's the kind of contract that Pittsburgh should be signing. Instead of giving Kevin Grant $2 million, $4 million a year, go sign Eric Bedard and hope that this is the year that his shoulders are damaged. It probably won't, but if on that 5-10% chance it does, and he stays healthy all year, you either have a really good starting pitcher who, you know, you might want to consider signing to a contract next year, and you might be willing to take a discount because you were the team that took a chance on him, or you've got a guy who traded the deadline like Mariners did last year. So I would say the teams who are non-contenders, who don't have a lot of young, good arms that they want to bring into the major leagues, these are the teams that should really be buying these guys more often than not. I think a team like the Red Sox and Yankees can afford to do these kind of deals, but they also will need more stability in their rotation because they're trying to basically, instead of maximize their upside, they're trying to raise their floor. So they know they're going to win, you know, 90 to 95. They want to make it more likely they're going to win 92 to 95 rather than 90 to 97.
You've seen the Bauer example here with the A's when you try to sign one of these guys to hold Jared Harper down.
They did, Brent Bertol Colon. I mean, this is why everyone was like, and this is the thing that doesn't, I don't quite understand why everyone freaked out about that signing. They're like, why are the A's trading away all their young starters and then signing a 38-year-old? Because they traded away all their young starters. They need one of these guys. So this is why the A's signed Bertol Colon. It's in order to give them the depth and not have to push all their young guys that they traded for if they want to keep Brad Peacock in the minors if they can. This is why I'm not one of these people who thinks that every major league team who is a projected non-contender should have a roster full of 22-year-olds. Like, I think it's a good idea to have some of these upside veterans sprinkled in, and I think this is the Colon deal is one of those ones that I just don't get involved. $700,000 for a guy who's basically a three-win pitcher last year. I know he wasn't very good in the second half, but his velocity is still there, his peripherals were still there. I know the personality's got some defects, but Milton Bradley would get like big contracts every year. I mean, baseball loves guys with personality defects. Bertol Colon should have gotten a lot more than $700,000. All right, thanks everyone.